You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Now, here's something that just might sound like a silly stunt from an ideologically bent lawmaker.
I would go for another 12 hours to try to break Strom Thurmond's record, but I've discovered that there are some limits to filibustering, and I'm going to have to go take care of one of those in a few minutes here.
That's Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky filibustering, that is, talking without stopping, to block the nomination of John Brennan to head up the CIA. The principle? Well, you decide if Senator Rand Paul has a point here.
That Americans could be killed in a cafe in San Francisco, or in a restaurant in Houston, or at their home in Bowling Green, Kentucky, is an abomination. It is something that should not and cannot be tolerated in our country.
Rand is referring to the apparent ambiguity in statements from Attorney General Eric Holder in a letter this month that he would not rule out the possibility of drone strikes on American soil in, quote, extraordinary circumstances, perhaps like the terrorist attacks on 9/11. Joining us now to explain and give us some context for all this is Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, and our resident historian on all of the records on Capitol Hill. Todd, welcome.
Hi, John.
First of all, the filibuster is over. How long did it go, and how close did it get to breaking any records? What's the number here?
Well, just under 13 hours, Senator Rand Paul went. Just made it into hour 13, ended up at about half past midnight. Overnight, John, is when he finished, not anywhere close to the record. We heard from Strom Thurmond from 1957, filibustering the Civil Rights Act of 1957 at the top. He went 24 hours and 18 minutes. That is the Senate record. As far as we can tell, Rand Paul seems to be about 9 or 10 in the annals of filibuster length. Now, these talking filibusters, however, they are rare. We throw around the term filibuster a lot these days because the Senate has gotten so slow. There are so many objections and so many cloture votes. Technically, they are filibusters, but the kind of filibuster that Rand Paul mounted last night, where he can hold the floor with the help of other senators, and 12 or 14 other senators did help him, including one Democrat, Senator Ron Wyden of the Intelligence Committee of Oregon.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because part of the sort of bipartisan, if not support, but sympathy for what Rand Paul is talking about comes from something that a lot of Americans heard yesterday when Attorney General Eric Holder was testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here he is being questioned by Senator Ted Cruz.
If a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil is not posing an immediate threat to life or bodily harm, does the Constitution allow a drone to kill that citizen?
I would not think that that would be an appropriate use of any kind of lethal force.
I would not think that would be an appropriate use of lethal force. Is that a no?
Let me be clear. Translate my appropriate to no. I thought I was saying no. All right? No.
Yeah, no.
Well, then I am glad.
Todd, is it your understanding and is it lawmakers' understanding that there is any ambiguity on this question of using drones to take out American citizens on U.S. soil? We should note a drone strike apparently was involved in the attack on Mr. Al-Awlaki, who is an American citizen in Yemen.
Yeah, and Anwar al-Awlaki is the third American that we know of who has been killed in the war on terror by U.S. drones. The head of the Lackawanna 6 from around Buffalo is apparently targeted by the United States early in the war on terror, and a third American as well. Awlaki's son, an American citizen, also killed. So the question has become, if such an American citizen is deemed an enemy combatant, but they happen to be in Denver or Detroit or someone else, could the president target them with a drone? And Rand Paul and his allies on the floor were extremely unsatisfied with that answer. Why does this all come down on Brennan? Because John Brennan, who is up to be CIA director, was the president's chief national security anti-terror advisor, was known to be the keeper of the strike list, basically the liquidation matrix, where enemy combatants for drone strikes were basically, the list was compiled and the president chose from that list to target people overseas. What if one of those people was on domestic soil? It sounds hypothetical, but the answer that Eric Holder gave, that in the case of, let's say, a Pearl Harbor attack or a 9/11, he said, in a case like that, he could see the president exercising such authority if such authority exists, but otherwise, no. Rand Paul and his allies are not satisfied with that answer.
Right. Well, we should note that while the CIA runs a lot of the drone operations out of its own agency there at Langley and in places around the United States where those drones are operated, there's also a military component. The Pentagon has its own drone program or its own drone access, I suppose, right?
There are several senators, John, throughout the debate on John Brennan and other military bills who want to take all of the military or paramilitary functions that have accrued at CIA through the Predator drone program and otherwise, take it away from them explicitly and park it in the Defense Department. They say, we don't have a problem with drones. We don't have a problem with Hellfire missiles being targeted at terrorists or alleged terrorists in Yemen or Pakistan or Afghanistan, you name it. But we don't want the CIA doing it. The CIA should be collecting intelligence, not firing missiles. Let's have these programs. Let's park them in the Defense Department. Those debates are ongoing, and that is part of the background of this.
And if that happens, it would certainly make the job at CIA perhaps less attractive to Mr. Brennan, who, of course, is in some sense the architect, as you pointed out, of the Obama drone approach. This nomination is not going to get held up anymore, right?
Well, that is unclear because Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, came to the floor last night saying he now supports the filibuster. Now, Senator Paul has yielded the floor. He's not doing the talking filibuster anymore. But you still need 60 votes to end debate, technically, and get this nomination moving. If Republicans are unified, John, behind this now highly optical effort that Rand Paul has mounted, and it's not clear that they will be. There are some establishment Republican media outlets, you know, this morning saying they're not for it. But if Republicans were united, they could hold this thing up until the White House issued more information on the drone program or prospective drone program. That vote could come later today, but they, according to the rules, it doesn't have to. So this is about Republicans now. Will there be 5 Republicans to vote to cut off debate? If the answer is yes, Brennan is in. This whole thing is over. If Republicans are unified, then no.
Finally, do you think this was dinner conversation at the White House with the Republicans last night, looking for the grand bargain before we go?
Well, I think they had other broader issues to talk about. That debt conversation, John, seems like it might be moving in some interesting places between other Republicans, not Mitch McConnell, but others, and the president's interesting.
All right, Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Coming up, Arkansas's new abortion law, now the most restrictive in the country. We'll have two sides of that issue coming up next.